I'd like to discuss with you five tshuvas today in the pages that you received, hopefully. And they all deal with nezikin and the issue of damages and compensation for damages. Except for one of the five. Now, I'm going to divide it up in the following way. 2, 2, and 1. Two of the tshuvas deal with what I call intentional damage, where the damager, meaning the mazik, had intention to damage. You know, he was fully aware of everything. And those are two tshuvas. Then there are another two tshuvas where the person who caused the damage had no intention whatsoever. And then in the middle, we have a case of a person who damaged himself. So what I'd like to begin with, if you have the pages, the next to the last page that you might have is Tuf Ayin Zayin, which is labeled Rofei Shita. And in the confusion of Corona and the volume of people that are in the hospitals, or perhaps are getting home care from physicians, a physician made a mistake. And as a result of his error, the patient was very sick and incurred damages, which means as a result of the mistake of the Rofe, this particular person was not able to go to work for a certain period of time, was not able to pay all sorts of fees that he had to pay for medical procedures, perhaps suffered a certain amount of pain. And in the laws of Nezikin, we have what's called Adam Hamazik, when a human being causes damage to someone else. And if the human being who was the mazik caused five categories of damage, he will pay for all those five categories. And that's called nezek, tsar, ripui, sheves, and boshes. Now, in most cases that we're going to discuss, nezek is not relevant. Nezek means that your value on the job market was decreased, was downgraded as a result of the damage. So, for example, in a perek called Hachovel, if a person, Nebuch, as a result of damages, he lost his arm, he is now worth less on the job market. Those aren't really the discussions that we're having. There's also something called Boshes, which is not so relevant to us either. Boshes means as a result of a certain act that was done publicly, you suffered humiliation, which is also considered on the Torah level something of value that you have to pay compensation for. But we're talking more about what's called tsar, ripui, and sheves, especially sheves. Sheves means the fact that you couldn't go to work, you were unemployed, you had no income for a certain amount of time. And the Torah says that a mazik has to pay those fees. But here we're dealing with a case of a rofe. And as we open up our discussion for today, we begin with a psak of the Shulchan Aruch that breaks new ground as far as a rofe is concerned. Now, the background to this, what I call revolution in terms of Nezikin, that there's a special halach that applies to a rofe, in which, even though he caused damages, he doesn't have to pay for that. We alleviate him of the normal responsibility of a mazik. And oddly enough, this halacha is codified by the Mechaber, by the Shulchan Aruch, not in Choshen Mishpat, but of all places in Yoredeya. And the reason for that is because the Shulchan Aruch in Yoredeya addresses a much more fundamental question about whether a person is in fact allowed to be a physician. And you and I might say, well, we live in a contemporary society where we rely so much on physicians. How could anyone even entertain the issue of whether or not going into this field of medicine is a question? But the answer is, the Gemara tells us that we need a special pasuk, Rapo Yirape, and we derive in Torah Shebaal Peh from that pasuk that a rofe is allowed to administer medical therapy. If not for that pasuk, it would not be allowed. And on a hashkafic level, that has to do with the fact that we believe in hashkachat Hashem, hashkacha pratis. A person is in a situation where he's ill as a result of divine providence. We don't have a right to interfere, but the Torah says, Rapo Yirape. The Ramban, in what's called the Kisvei Ramban, the writings of the Ramban, the various essays that were collected, it's not the Ramban al Torah. He has a whole section on Rofim, and one of the most important contributions of the Ramban, who himself was a physician, to this area of study is that a person who has the ability, the possibility of administering medical help, he's responsible, he's required to do so. And lest he say, well, you know what, this is too tricky, because what if I make a mistake? I'm going to have to pay damages. And what a terrible thing to live with your conscience if you cause somebody harm. And the Ramban goes on to say, no, the Torah says, don't worry about damages. And don't worry about the possibility that you might not do the best job and somebody might suffer as a result. You have to study medicine if you have the potential and the skills, both intellectual and, of course, there are other skills, your daim that you need, then you're obligated. It's not just that the Torah allowed you to pursue medicine, but in certain cases, if you have the ability to do so, you're obligated to become a physician. And medical help is obligatory. That's the Ramban's breakthrough. And in that context, where the issue is whether you're allowed to go into medicine or not, whether you're allowed to administer medical therapy, here's where Yoredeya comes to the fore. It's not a Choshen Mishpat issue. The Choshen Mishpat issue is going to be what I call a spin-off of the Yoredeya question. The Yoredeya question is, how do I live my life? Yoredeya addresses Issa V'Heter, and the question is, can I pursue medicine? And the answer is an absolute yes. And the Ramban takes it one step further. You're obligated to do so. In this context, the Shulchan Aruch writes that if the physician makes a mistake, then he doesn't have to pay damages. However, the license to pursue medicine in halachic terms, the permission to do so, is conditional. Not everyone could say, well, I'm going to give you a therapeutic method. You have to be what's called a baki. You have to be an expert. And not only that, says the Shulchan Aruch, you have to have rishus of bezdin. That means that the Jewish court system has given you the license to pursue this profession of medical care. And the first question that we want to ask in the case of corona, because the overwhelming burden that's been placed on the medical field and all the doctors and so forth, it's become quite common that unfortunately there have been mistakes that have been made. The first question is, in a halachic context, do the rofim have what's called rishus bezdin? I don't know, maybe you know and I don't know, that bezdin sat and they checked out every possible medical person and said, well, we give the okay. So the contemporary poskim have to deal with this question. And we have two levels. We have the first level, and that's the Shevet HaLevi, who died not long ago. His name was Rav Vosner. And he writes that the Rofim in our day, since they passed their exams in medical school, they are considered, A, to be Bekir, which is very fascinating in and of itself, because you and I might have argued, well, okay, you have a medical degree, it's a nice graduate degree, and you can hang it up with your diploma on the wall, but how much experience do you have? Are you really a bucky? But that's the assumption. You passed your exams, you have your MD, you're considered a bucky. Could be that in certain specialized areas of medicine, you know, the fact that you have an MD doesn't mean that you're an ophthalmologist and you know how to, you know, do surgery on eyes. But number two, says Rav Vosner, a rofe has the status of Rishus Bezdin. And he suggests, therefore, that any medical person who is working in a hospital, he has the halachic right to do so. And not only that, he has the backing of Ki'ilu the Bezdin, such that now he's exempt from paying damages. And the one who took this even a step further is none other than Rav Yosef Shalom Maron HaGrisha. And he says that today, since a person is tested, he calls it Mivchanim Kapdaniyim, in order to get his license, says Rav Yosef, he has to pass some very difficult tests. Then Yochel Laso Gam B'Mokum Sheish Gadol Mimenu. He's not the world's expert in the field, but nevertheless, he is considered to be a physician. The halachas of number one, Rishus, he's allowed to get involved in medicine. And number two, the halacha that he has Bezdin behind him goes so far as to say that even if there may be a buck who's greater than him, we give him the full background, the full backing, and therefore he doesn't have to pay damages.
I have a question.
Please, David.
Okay, so it sounds like a Gemara in Sanhedrin, which says that if you get a professional diet, you don't have to pay for his mistakes. But if it was said bar yilecha, then bar yilecha, then it's not professional, then he does have to pay. Not like the same thing.
Yeah, it's in a sense it's similar to Zeb Borer, because what happens is that the two judges sort of recognize the status of the third judge, and very often that third judge is going to make the final decision. And here, it's the medical system or the medical schools themselves, the graduate schools, that recognize this particular individual as a doctor. They gave him the license to perform medicine. And the contemporary poskim are writing that has halachic validity. You and I might have said, well, we as representing the judiciary of the Jewish nation, we have to give our own exams, we have to give our own licenses, we have to decide who's a bucky and who's not a bucky. No. The contemporary poskim, and we're talking about Rav Vosner, Rav Elyashiv, and certainly Rav Shlomo Zalman beforehand, they said that we can rely on the medical field as a secular field to grant and recognize what's called Rishus Bezd, a substitute for Rishus Bezd. Okay, Rabosa, I don't want to spend too much time on this, because what's more exciting is a breakthrough tshuva of the Tashbetz, who lived approximately 5.5 centuries ago, and he writes, I'm going to just read to you his language, because sometimes I want you to appreciate what I add. If you read his language, I don't think you'll have a clue as to what he says. So, again, that's just, I'm trying to... Anyway, he says the following. That a rofe is only potter. You know, we thought, based on the Shulchan Aruch, carte blanche, a rofe makes a mistake. You cannot sue him. He's covered by the halacha. We protect his back. No compensation, absolute, and that's the end of the story. Says Tashbetz, that's not so. It depends. And I'm getting to read to you his language. He writes, Ta'a bi'etzem maisa harufua, mamish, then he's potter. But Tavi Asa, O Nasan, Mashalo Hayat Sarich Chayav. Again, the language is somewhat ambiguous. He's making a fundamental distinction, and he's limiting the Ptur of a Rofa. We started our discussion today by saying there's a new halacha within the world of Nezikin that a Rofa is exempt. And maybe that's based on the Ramban, as we said, to encourage people to go into this field. Comes along the Tashbetz, and he says, wait a minute. This is not a carte blanche exception and exemption of the Rofe that he's part of in all cases. It's only a case of Ta b'maisa refuah. What does that mean? He's always making a mistake in the maisa refuah. But we can understand the Tashbetz from the contrast to the case where he is chayav. And that is where he doesn't follow the standard medical procedure. The Tashbetz is saying the following, that if you would gather together, or at least on Zoom, all the physicians that are experts in a certain area, they would come by consensus to a certain medical procedure. That becomes standard medical procedure. That's mashitzarech. That's what the chola needs. This rofe broke from following the standard procedure, and what would have been, as he calls it, a maisa refuah. Maisa refuah means standard procedure. He did something new. He applied what he thought might be a more effective medical treatment. He made that decision on his own. The Tashbetz, in my humble opinion, is saying that he broke away from standard procedure. Kol HaKavod, he wants to be very radical and revolutionary. He has new ideas. He thinks he can come up with a better procedure. At this point, he is no longer protected by Jewish law. From now on, he has taken the responsibility into his own hands. So that we go back to our original question about a rofe in the case of Corona that made a mistake. What kind of mistake did he make? What protects him from the law of Nezikin and applies this very unique categorical ptur, an exemption called a rofe? Well, was he following standard procedure? Is that what the books tell him to do under those circumstances? He did this test, he did that test, there were blood tests, there were x-rays, and there were decisions that had to be made, but these decisions were made in the past, and the medical field has accepted a certain standard procedure. If he applies those standard procedures, he makes a mistake in the maisa refuah. This would be so typical of a surgeon, for example. We're all human beings, and as great of a surgeon as you are, your incision might be a little bit off by a millimeter, or it might be too deep, and it causes tremendous damages. So this is one of the most extreme cases of halachic, where the halacha addresses a case of a rofe shetah. And you and I would say, what are you talking about? The man made a mistake in the surgery? He's going to have to pay for that. And if the patient died, let him go to the Irmiklat for that. The answer is no. We're going to protect you. The halacha is going to protect you. And there's a special ptur of a rofe because you followed the procedure as any other surgeon would. You slipped. Your hand moved away. Whatever it might be. And your pot. But if you come up with your own idea of procedure that is not accepted by the consensus of the profession of Rofim, now you're on your own. Now you're treated like any other mazik. And you'll have to pay damages. Now again, there are a million nuances here. We could spend our whole lives trying to work this out. You know, what happens if there was no medical procedure that was accepted? What happens if there were two different opinions? blah, blah, blah. You can write an entire book of Shulchan Aruch about this very distinction of the Tashbetz. Mind you, this is very profound. But for our purposes, just to simplify it, what did the Rofe do for this corona patient? And if he did what any other Rofe should have done and would have done, then if he made a mistake, he is exempt. But if he came up with his own ideas, and you and I might stand and applaud, because the standard procedure doesn't look so great, then he's not protected by the law. And therefore, he says the following, and this is Rabbi Elchanan Peretz that I mentioned in the past. He says that Hayom, he thinks that in our context, this fantastic chiddush, it could very well be that the Rofe is not protected by Jewish law. Mind-boggling. Why not? And the answer is because the Rofe is secular. Now, wait a second. A Jew is a Jew, whether he's religious or not religious. You know, Jewish law is objective. It applies. The laws in Ezekiel apply to everyone. So how could Rav Peretz, I'm just doing a pedagogical, you know, drama for you, because I think this is very dramatic. How can he make an exception and distinguish between a religious physician and, as Rav Kook, the first chief rabbi of Israel, would have said, a not yet religious physician? And the answer is that in Nezikin, there's a law called, there's a fundamental principle called Hischaivus. Hischaivus means that I can accept upon myself a responsibility, a financial responsibility, that is not dictated by the law. So in Jewish law, I would be covered. But I went a step further, and I made a commitment to pay you even when I don't have to pay you. Why is that relevant? And the answer is that in secular law, in Western law, whether it's British law, Turkish law, and even in American law, there's no such thing as an exception for a rofe. The law itself says that if you made a boo-boo, you can be held responsible. Again, there's insurance, thank God. You know, otherwise the whole profession of refuah, of rofe, will go down the tubes. You might as well close every last rofe shop, because you're talking about millions of dollars of lawsuits. But the answer is, there's insurance. And in America, for example, the insurance rates are going up tremendously. And that's a real problem for the profession of medicine. But be that as it may, you, in a secular court, if it's proven that you made a mistake, you will pay for that, or the insurance company will pay for that. And the distinction between whether you followed this procedure or that procedure is not going to help you. Why? Because you may be a surgeon, and, you know, there's a gallbladder surgery, and they tell you exactly how to take out the gallbladder, and there's an absolute consensus, and for that you go to medical school, and you cut up cadavers, and you learn how to do this, but you made a mistake. As a surgeon, you cut the wrong direction, or it slipped, the knife slipped. You'll pay for that. Or the insurance, as I say, will pay for it. Says Rav Peretz, that if you want to know whether a rofe in corona would be responsible and liable to pay damages, ask yourself whether he's a frum rofe or a secular rofe. If he's secular, then he understood that his commitment and his responsibilities on a financial level are determined by the law of the land. And he went into the surgery or whatever the procedure was, understanding that with a schaivus, with a commitment to pay. Whereas a rofe who's not interested in what the law has to say, he's interested in what the halach has to say. He's a God-fearing Jew. He never accepted to go beyond the halacha. And therefore, he will be exempt, again, only if he followed standard procedure. But he made a mistake. And therefore he writes, Maskana Ledina, if you have page Tov Ayin Zayin, that imachok, if the law of the land, machayev rofe sheta, the law of the land says that a rofe, if he made a mistake, he has to pay for that. Hu kibel atzmo zeh, is therefore he should be chay. Now I want to get to case number two, which is also an unintentional hezek. And for that, I'd like you to turn to page Tuf Ayin Gimel. I'll take questions a little bit later, if you don't mind, just to get a little bit more of the picture. He describes a situation in which people are dispensing all sorts of drugs to help corona patients. Now again, every country has its own strict laws about this. You know, you can't just administer a drug on a trial basis without getting the acceptance, the approval of the Federal Drug Administration. But nevertheless, this is what's happening. And I know for a fact that this is happening, and there are certain kinds of very, very experimental drugs that are being used. Again, I'm not coming to judge anyone because we're in a very desperate situation. And if we're waiting for the approval of the authorities, I don't know how many people are going to die in the meantime, chas v'shalom. And it's interesting, in the Shaila, in the question, where he talks about this guy named Reuven, that's not his name, but he calls him Reuven, who offered a drug to a corona patient. He calls him one of the mumchim, in inverted commas. What he means to say is that this guy is very far from being a mumcha. He was trying out a drug because he was desperate to try to help this person. But he was anything but a mumcha in that drug. And he says the following. Reuven's kavana was lahatzil es chavero. He gave him a trufa. He gave him a certain drug. And as a result, nafal lemishkov. He got sick and sick. And once again, we can discuss, you know, compensation for time at work that was lost, employment. You could discuss tsar, you know, the pain that he suffered. You could talk about ripui. He now has additional medical expenses to pay. And the question is, this person who is a self-appointed mumcha and dispenses a drug and had the right intention in mind, but nevertheless he caused his friend such great tsar, such great damage, does he have to pay? Now keep in mind that the reason why I chose this tshuva as number two, even though it's earlier in the text, is because I wanted to point out to you that anything we discussed earlier has no application in this case. If in the case of a rofe, who has what we call reshus bezdin, and he is applying as a person in the medical profession, the standard, you know, consented procedure, that's one thing. Then he's protected by Jewish law under the special unique halach and nezikin of a rofe shehizik. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about someone who's not operating as a rofe. I'm not even sure if he's a rofe at all. I don't even know for sure that he passed his exams in medical school. He calls him mumchim, you know, in the colloquial sense, he's a self-appointed mumcha. He's certainly very far from being a bucky. And he doesn't have reshus bezdin, meaning he doesn't have the okay of the medical profession. The only thing going for him is the fact that his intention was pure and good, as opposed to the next two tshuvas that I want to cover, where he had a deliberate negative intention. So he starts by quoting a tshuva called the Ramatz. I'm not sure exactly who this tshuva is. And he writes that there was a case of someone who saw that his friend's very fragile glass was about to be taken away by a fire and consumed in a fire. He ran to try to save his friend's expensive glass by taking it far away. And he did so. The only problem is that when he got to where he got to, instead of placing it down, it fell from his hands at the last second, and it smashed. Now we have to add another point here again. I'm trying not to get off on a tangent, but just as a footnote, we're not talking about a case where had this person not intervened, the object would have been destroyed. That's not the case. But this is a case where the person, as a good Samaritan, took the initiative to try to save his friend's property, but dropped the object and it broke. And in the Tshuvas he says that he doesn't have to pay. Why? Because he did it mitoch mitzvah. We have a new category here of mazik mitoch mitzvah. He was misasik in a mitzvah. The Torah says vashevoso lo, that you should return a person's lost object. He tried to return this object which was about to be destroyed or could be destroyed. And toch kidei his misaskus b'mitzvah, the object was destroyed. And in such a case, he's potter. This is reminiscent of sugyas in Masechta Krisus, of a ptur in chatos, for example. Normally you'd be chayv chatos, but you were osek b'mitzvah. You have a case where he's the moel, you know, circumcised the wrong baby. There were two babies, and he took the wrong baby, which was not an eighth day baby on Shabbos, and he violated the Shabbos. All these cases where he doesn't bring a carbon, he doesn't need kapara, he's completely potter because he was osek b'mitzvah. And now, if you're following the logic, the author of this tshuva rejects the analogy. The case of the glass is different from our case of drugs. And why is that? Because if you were to stop, you know, take a frame of the camera and freeze it before, just a split second before he dropped the glass, then what you see is his askus b'mitzvah. When Reuven tries to save the glass object of Shimon, and therefore he's carrying it far away from the fire, that itself is defined as a mitzvah. That's called haschalas ha-mitzvah. He's begun the mitzvah. He doesn't complete the mitzvah until he puts the object down. So he got messed up in the end of the mitzvah, but at least he started in the mitzvah. Once he starts with a mitzvah, that's called his askus b'mitzvah, and that's going to exempt him from damages. But in our case, where he administered the wrong drug, again, he had all the right intentions in mind, thank you, Shkoyach, but it was the wrong drug, and as a result, the patient became more and more ill, you cannot call that aschalas ha-mitzvah. Where's this askus b'mitzvah? Just the kavana? Oh, so he says that he has a tshuva from the Chasam Sofer, and he's going to prove from the tshuva of the Chasam Sofer that the ptur here, the exemption for damages, is not because he started a mitzvah, but because he had intention to do a mitzvah. What's the case of the Chasam Sofer? A woman wanted to save her friend, and in this case, the mazik, we'll call her, took a certain kind of drug and poured it into her friend's mouth, hoping that that would help her. And at the end, it turned out to be poisonous, toxic. And that some sofer says that she doesn't have to pay any damages. Why? Because she was osekes b'mitzvah. And here is a case where the mistake was made from the get-go. It was the wrong sam. Instead of giving her a sam achayim, instead of giving her a drug that would bring her back to good health, she gave her a drug that was toxic, that was a sam, that was very, very dangerous. And yet, nevertheless, even though from the beginning there was no real mitzvah act over here, you cannot, you know, stop the frame and take a picture and say, well, she's doing something that's very helpful. You can't say that in this case. And yet, the Chasam Sofer says that we apply the principle of tos bidvar mitzvah. You made a mistake as you were involved in a mitzvah. Now, at this point, we have a problem. And what's our problem? If we go back to the shut that we started with, the Tshuva the Ramatz, in a case where Reuven tried to save the glass object of Shimon. So the Ramatz comes to the conclusion that if he drops it and breaks it, Reuven's going to pay damages. Why? And the Ramatz says it really depends. If Shimon yelled out and said, please, anyone who could come and save my object, that's one thing. But if Reuven took the initiative on his own, and Shimon, the owner of the glass, did not indicate any approval, he did not request in any shape or form that someone should jump in and save his glass, then Reuven is acting on his own initiative, and the Ramatz says, despite the fact that he's interested in a mitzvah, he wants to save his friend's glass, nevertheless, he will pay damages. Why? Because this askus b'mitzvah only applies when Reuven is doing a mitzvah on behalf of Shimon, and Shimon asked him to do so. Shimon approved of the action. Shimon took the initiative. Then, in the laws of damages, Reuven is exempt from damages because he is doing the bidding of the nizak, the one who was damaged. However, in our case, nobody forced this drug down the mouth of the corona patient. The corona patient is not in a state of comatose. He made the decision. Again, he discussed it with this so-called mumcha. He was in a desperate state. And he decided to ask so-and-so, that so-called mumcha, to please administer the drug. In that case, it's like Shimon who asked Reuven, please help me with this glass. It's about to get burnt and go up in flames. And since Shimon approved and even requested from Reuven to do this mitzvah on his behalf, that's why Reuven is exempt. So too here, the so-called mumcha will be exempt from damages because the nizak here asked him, and in fact he took it himself. I mean, he swallowed the pill, and therefore Reuven is parted from damages. Now, he adds a very, very interesting twist to this whole discussion based on a Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish says that in a certain case, in the Gemara Baba Kama, Reuven put some sort of toxic drug in front of Shimon's animal. The animal ate it. And the Gemara says that Reuven doesn't have to pay unless Reuven had kavana, had intention to kill Shimon's animal. And that means that if you have kavana to destroy something, even if that other nizak was, in a sense, a partner of it, like the animal decided to eat the sam, so the action and the damage was created by the nizak, not just the mazik. So the mazik only brings the toxic substance to the animal, but the animal decides to eat that toxic substance. Nevertheless, you'd be chayav, but only if you had kavana lahazik. And here's a case where you could have two identical scenarios, and in the laws of nizikin, they're worlds apart, even though they're identical. It all depends upon the mindset and the intention. If the mazik had intention to create a damage, he will pay for that. This despite the fact that the animal came and took it on his own, on her own. But if, on the other hand, the mazik had no intention, then in the absence of intention, there is a total exemption from paying damages. Okay, Rabbi Osei, these are the two cases where there was no deliberate intention to damage. Now I want to discuss with you two tshuvas where there was a deliberate intention to damage. The first one is the first page that, David, again, thank you, that you sent out, which is page Tuf Ayin. And it's, honestly, it's a very strange case. This is the type of case where I'm tempted to think it never happened, lohoi v'lo nivra, but it was created in order to answer a conceptual, theoretical question about corona. And in the reality that he's describing, which honestly, I don't believe that this could ever happen. he says that it's possible for a person to forge a document that says that so-and-so, we'll call him Reuven, is a corona carrier. That as if to say he has tested positive for corona. Now, in this country, and I assume it's the same all over the world, if you test positive for corona, that is a legal document. That's here, it's recorded in your kupat cholim forever and ever. You can never get it off your record. So there's no way that you can forge a document and bring it to the police and prove that so-and-so Reuven, who's your adversary, is a carrier, he's infected with corona. So honestly, I don't know. It could be that, you know, we're talking about a situation where there's everyone is freaked out, so to speak, and you can somehow pull this off. So what's the situation here? Reuven is on a plane, or he's about to take off, and he makes big bucks because he buys and he sells. He buys cheap in Asia and he sells it more expensive in Israel or wherever he is on the face of the globe. And Shimon is his main competitor. Shimon wants to get him. So he produces some sort of, again, a document. It's not exactly clear. Brings it to the police that this guy Reuven, who got on a plane and is about to take off, is infected with corona. Immediately, when the police get this documentation or this claim of Shimon, they climb onto the plane and they pull Reuven off the plane, which is exactly what Shimon wanted to happen. As a result, Reuven lost tons of business that he was about to make profits in the buying and selling market somewhere in Asia. And the question now is, Nezikin, who's going to pay damages here? Can we assume that the person, Shimon in this case, who produced this false document and therefore sent the police after Reuven, has to pay damages for Reuven? Again, what kind of damages? It's not that Reuven is worth less on the market as a slave. He doesn't have to nezek. There may be some element of boshes when he's taken off the plane. Certainly, I would assume he's humiliated. And beyond that, it could affect his reputation. That's also included in boshes. He's going to suffer losses financially, sheves. And therefore the question is, can Reuven, once he proves that the whole thing was just a bluff, it was a fake, and when he gets to the police, he can induce all the evidence he needs against this terrible thing, can he sue Shimon for damages? And I find this absolutely fascinating because there's actually a sugya of a comment that seems to address the same question. And we'll use the names Reuven and Shimon again. Shimon locks Reuven in a room. And as a result, Shimon can't get loose, he can't get free, and he can't go out to the market to make his profit. Hechniso becheder gemar bavakam pehei v'sagar adelis olav bitlo mimalachto. It has to pay sheves. Sheves means how much would have been worth for you if you could have gone out to the market, if you would have been free from this incarceration. How much money would you have made? How much money therefore is it worth to you to avoid this kind of sheves? Sheves means where you sit idly and you cannot pursue your work. But the Gemara says the following, mind-boggling. If Shimon takes Reuven and locks him up, Shimon will pay damages, in this case, sheves. If, on the other hand, Reuven is already in a room and Shimon locks the door, the Gemara says that that's called Grama Benizik. And again, this requires hours and hours of study. Jewish law, what we call Torah law, is radically different in this respect from any other Western law. In Western law, in secular law, there's no such thing as Grama Benizikin Potter. But the halacha, this is the, call it the Gzeiras HaKasuv, element in the law of Nezikin says that you're only chayev for direct damages. Indirect damages do not incur liability. Now, again, it's more complicated than I'm making it out to be because there are two systems of liability in halacha. There's what's called bedine adam, that which you can sue for in a civil court, and then is bedin shamayim, which means that if you want to do the moral right thing, you have to pay damages, even though it was indirect. And the Meiri in Perek Hakonis goes far as to say that if you don't pay damages when you chay bedin shamayim, you're a gazlan. And your posuliedus, we will not accept your testimony. So when we talk about a case of somebody locking the door on someone else and making it impossible for him to go out and make a living and he has to pay damages, well, if we say that it's only grama, then we shift our chiyuv and downgrade it from dine adam to din shamay. Therefore, in this case, whereby sending the police after Reuven, Shimon has successfully locked up Reuven. You know, he's in a jail for a day or two, but main thing is he's not on the plane to go to China and make his money. Then there's no question about it that on a Din Shamayim level, he's chayav. But here the question is, can we upgrade it to Din Dinei Adam? By the way, I'm looking, David, at your face here, and I'm thinking of my good friend Sam Nussbaum, who passed away. I remember he used to travel to China, remember? And he was no youngster. I liked him very much. In any event, in this tshuva that we learn, here on page Tuf Ayin Aleph, he quotes one of the Rishonim called the Rama Mipanau, who writes that there is a case where a person locks up someone, but he does it biyadayim, even if the person was found in that spot. Meaning, the classic case in the Gemara in Bava Kamma is you pick up somebody, throw him into a room, and lock the door. That's called a chiyuv biday adam, he has to pay damages. But here's a case called hadke bandrunia ubatle, where he takes, what's the English word for chains, or I'm not sure what the exact English translation would be here, but he chains a person down. He takes metal chains and ties them down. And in such a case, he's chayav. Why? Because he did an action. Now, a man sends the police after someone to lock him up. Is that called a maisa biyadayim? Well, when you think about it, Shimon, who's going to be tied and feted, there's no question about it, and Bedin Shemayim has to pay, but he did not do a maisa biyadayim. He did not lock his friend Reuven into an incarcerate him. However, it's more complicated than that because the Ramban says that if you tie him up in chains, that makes it into a hezek nikar, which means that makes it obvious that you are doing a hezek to a person. And it could be that in this case where you send the police after someone, that's obvious enough to make it into a hezek nikar. And therefore, even though in this case you did not chain him down with a maisa begufo, but nevertheless it's considered like a maisa begufo according to this Ramban. So that requires its own study, but I'm just mentioning that on the side. Now here, was there someone on the face of the earth who took Reuven and locked him up? The answer is yes, but who was that? That was the police officer. Now here we get into another issue, and that is what we call shlichus. And that means that if Shimon appoints someone to lock up Reuven, if that someone is now an agent that is only operating because he was told to do so by Shimon in this case, then shlucho shel adam kimoso, we can sort of integrate two personalities into one. Reuven and the shoter become one. And now, in effect, Reuven is locking up Shimon. Again, I got the names mixed up. I'm sorry. Shimon and the Shoter are now one, because the Shoter is now Shimon's Shliach. And in effect, the Halacha now recognizes that it is Shimon himself who locked up Reuven, doing a Maisa B'Yodayim, a direct Maisa Hezek on Reuven. The problem is that we have a principle called Ein Shliach L'Dvar Avera. That Shlichus, to send an agent, does not operate when you're doing an Avera. Ein L'cha Avera G'dola Mizu. You're taking an innocent person who wants to take off and do his business, you're locking him up in a jail with no justification. You cannot possibly say that anyone's working on your behalf as a Shliach. But here, he quotes a Ramah. And that is that Ein Shliach L'Dvar Avera means we don't anticipate, we don't expect that the Shliach is actually going to carry out this Shlichus. Because the Shliach knows very well and recognizes that he's violating the will of God. He is a self-free agent. And if he decides to fulfill the Shlichus, that's called Divrei HaRav and Divrei HaTalmud, he shouldn't be listening to the person who sent him to implement some sort of an Avera, and therefore the Shlichus is batel. However, if the Shliach has no way of knowing that what he's about to do is an Avera, if he is convinced that he makes this decision, he's committed himself to be the Shliach on someone else's behalf, and he thinks he's doing the right thing, in such a case, Yesh Shliach L'Dvar Avera. And therefore, since this Shoter has no clue that this documentation is false, he therefore will certainly, we can anticipate, fulfill his Shlichus. He's almost like forced to do so. He's in a state of coercion because he's doing his job. And in such a case, we could apply the principle of Yesh Shliach L'Dvar Avera. And all this is good, except for the Ketzos HaChoshen. The Ketzos HaChoshen says that although in certain cases, Yesh Shliach L'Dvar Avera, but in Nezikin, when we need a Maisa B'Yadayim, a Maisa Hezek, then Shlichus does not generate a Maisa Hezek. And therefore, once again, we have to reduce his Chiyuv from that of a Din Adam to the lower level of Din Shammai. And I thought at this point, ball game over, so to speak. Again, you have to understand that emotionally, I don't know if you're with me on this, I think that Shimon should be tied and feathered here. So I'm not happy. I'm not a happy camper. If you tell me the Ketzos, and therefore, Ein Shliach L'Dvar Avera, and even if there is Shliach L'Dvar Avera, but it's not considered a Maisa B'Yadayim, it still remains Grama, and it's an indirect Hezek, and the Torah says that you don't pay damages in a court of law, you cannot be compelled in a case of indirect damage. I'm not a happy camp. But it seems that the author of this tshuva is also not a happy camp. And he has a major breakthrough of the Ramah. There are two kinds of mazik, two categories of mazik. There's a mazik biyodayim, where you do a physical act of damage, like the case that we discussed before, where you give someone a trufa and it's only going to cause him worse, you know, worse in his situation, where you drop someone's glass and it breaks. That's called Nezikin of Maisa B'Yadayim. Says the Ramah, there's an entirely different category of Nezikin. A Nezikin through Dibur, through speech. Where does the Ramah get this from? This is a sugya at the beginning of Masechta Gittin called Moser. Moser means where I tell the authorities, take this guy in. And again, you know, we're talking about a horrible situation where one Jew thinks out on the other Jew. And probably the Jew who was the Moser is probably a, you know, he's probably an apostate. He's probably a mumar, but whatever it is. Anyway, this is the way he does it. He's moser. And the Ramah says that the Gemara in Gittin says that a moser has to pay. Now, there are two types of moser. Even in Moses, a moser gufo shel adam, where he tells the authorities that this fellow is violating the will of the government, lock him up and punish him, beat him up. And then there's another case where he's moser mamono shel chaver. And he says, you know, this guy's cheating on his taxes and you have to confiscate his property. That's moser mamono shel chaver. And he's chayev. He has to pay damages in a Jewish court of law. Why? Where's the maisa b'yadayim? Says the Ramah, it's a brand new category of mazik al yedei dibur. And if you cause someone damages by speaking, you will pay damages for that in a Jewish court of law, and it's chayev b'dinei adam. So the author of the Tshuva, Rabbi Elchanan Peretz, wants to claim that when you present a document to the police that so-and-so, Reuven, who's on a plane about to take off, is carrying this disease, Shimon is now a mazik al yedei dibur, which comes under the category of moser, and therefore he should pay damages. Now, at the end of this long tshuva, which you'll see that ends on page Tuf Ayin Beis, he comes to the conclusion that based on a shach and a maril, that this Ramah that we mentioned about mazik al yedei dibur, the category of moser, would not apply in our case. Why? Because in our case, if you don't apply the principle of shlichus, then it's not really moser. Why? Because it's the police that made the decision to take this Reuven off the flight. And that brings us back to the issue of shlichus in Nezikin. And since, as we said before, you need a maisa b'yadayim in the case of Nezikin, and here it's through shlichus, even in, if I grant you the yesh shlich l'dvar avera, but nevertheless it doesn't constitute a maisa b'yadayim. So he comes to the conclusion at the end that Shimon is not going to have to pay damages in a Jewish court of law, and he's only chayev b'din shamay. So that's the first of two cases that he discussed about Nezikin with a deliberate intention to damage someone. The second case is on page Tuf Ayin Dalet. And this is very fascinating. The person who has now tested positive for corona cannot go to work. He's in quarantine for sure. And he owes certain debts. And his debtors are forcing him to go out to work so that they will be able to collect the money that's owed to them. And they apply pressure to this person, claiming that if he doesn't comply with their wishes and go out of quarantine and work and bring in money to pay the debts, he's going to be in bad trouble. It's kind of like a mafioso situation, if you know what I mean. And the title of this tshuva is very telling. Misha Ansuhu Lahazik Haim Chayev Al Nezokov. Ansu means that they forced him by pressuring him to go out to work. As a result of the fact that he went out to work, he infected other people. Now, who has to pay? There are three possibilities. Either the ma'anes, in other words, those people who threatened him, and under duress he complied. He himself, as the carrier who infected others, he has to pay? Or number three, no one has to pay? And he quotes one of the tshuvas of Mishpatei HaTorah, that a person who threatens someone, and the other person is mazik under the duress of a threat, even though that other person is the one who actually carried out the hezek, the one who threatened him is what you'd call grama. He's the indirect mazik, not the direct mazik. Nevertheless, there's a special halacha of what's called a ma'ayim. A ma'ayim means he threatened someone, that he is an upgraded status of grama. Normally, grama, as we said before, is potter. So you have black and white, right? We say either a person did a ma'isa b'yadayim, a direct act of damage, or he did something indirect, and he's potter. No. There's a gray area in between. The gray area in between is called garmi. And garmi means a direct hezek that's indirect. Like, for example, let's say you own a document, and with that document you could have claimed a loan. And somebody comes along and burns that document. He didn't take money out of your pocket. He burnt a piece of paper that's worth less than a pruta. But he caused you such a damage, and that's called garmi. If you threaten a person, and under duress that person goes out and damages, then you're going to be chayev under the law of ma'anes, of someone who forces someone else to damage. And the Mishpatei HaTorah wants to therefore come to the conclusion that in this case, we can actually apply the principle of ma'ayim. Ma'ayim means to threaten. And the principle, therefore, of Dina de Garmi, and as a result, it's considered as if he did a Maisa Hezek, an actual direct act of damage, and he is absolutely culpable, and he has to pay. Let me take a break now and ask if there are any questions or comments on what we've said so far. And we'll make a note of where we got up to on page Tuf Ayin Hay. And the last tshuva that I want to discuss with you, maybe next week, is whether a person can cause damage to himself. That was the fifth of the five tshuvas. So we covered four out of five. That's a pretty good grade of 80%. Okay, then. If there's anyone who wants to turn on their... Let me just say a few words about the fifth tshuva. Not that we finished the fourth. There's still a lot more to talk about in the case of Ma'ayim, where he pressured the guy to go to work, and as a result, people were infected. But the fifth tshuva, which is midway between the two extremes, it's not a deliberate maisa hezek, or is it someone who really wants to save someone, and he's doing it as a mitzvah? But what about someone who wants to bring damages upon himself? And that you'll find on page Tuf Ayin Beis. And he asks, is it mutter for a person to bring tsar upon himself? Why, in the context of corona, would somebody begin to do so? And the answer is that apparently in the United States, the way he says it here in the tshuva, in the shela, the expense, the price, the going price for a ventilator of a mechonat neshama is a great price. And this person decides that in order to save himself that monetary expenditure, he'll use doctors and he will use oxygen machines that are much less dramatic, much less expensive than what he calls mechonat hanshama. And the Rofim say that he's not in a life-threatening situation if he uses these less expensive machines to give him oxygen. Is he allowed to cause himself tsar because he's going to go through a lot of difficulty, you know, breathing, and for the purpose of what? Of saving money. And l'chora, at face value, we would say that the answer is explicit in Rabbi Elazar HaKapar, his famous drasha, in the Gemara in Bava Kamma Tzadi Aleph, regarding the Nazir. The Torah says that the Nazir, at the end of his Naziris, has to bring a korban, v'chipar olam yashar chot al nefesh. And the Gemara asks, what was the chet al nefesh over here? But he was a Nazir. And the Gemara answers, shetzir atzmo min ayayin. As a result, he needs kapara because he denied himself yayin. So let's call this a kal v'chomer. If somebody who denies himself the pleasure of drinking wine is considered a chote, and for that he needs a kapara and a karbon in the case of a nozir, then how much more so someone who is actually mitzayir himself, not just deny himself pleasure, but deny himself air to breathe, so to speak, how much more so should this be considered a chote and a chet? But the flip side of it is that perhaps in the case of a nozir, we're not sure if the nozir does or doesn't have a justification for denying himself wine. In this case, he does have a certain justification. There's a variable here that, in a sense, mitigates and motivates him to want to suffer this tsar, and that's to avoid a great expense. And there are many situations in life where a person may say, well, I'm going to suffer a little bit, and I'll save myself a loss. You know, can imagine a case of a person who wants to sleep out in the, on the ground, near the river, and instead of renting, some sort of an ohel, being in an achsanya, some sort of an inn. He wants to save himself the, or, for example, imagine the case where you're moving apartments. And for a certain price, a going rate, you can have the movers come and schlep everything. But you want to schlep it yourself, and your mom is killing yourself. Why? Because you want to save the money that you'd have to pay the schleppers, the sabalim and the movers. So there are many such situations where money, is a factor in this in the balance here, when you balance the tsar on the one hand. Now, there are cases where it's explicit that you're allowed to suffer. For example, in a case of somebody who wants to do tshuva, the Gemara in Masechet Nedarim on Daf Yud and the Shita Mekubetzes in Nedarim says that if he needs, in order to overcome his Yetzirah, he needs to starve himself, then he's allowed to do so, even though he's going to suffer. Well, for example, if you look in Rav Perlau, who wrote a super commentary on Rav Sadia Gaon, he writes that when the Gemara talks about being Mitzayer himself, that means he's not allowed to be Mitzayer himself. However, if somebody denies fulfilling his pleasures in life, that's not considered a chote. And on the contrary, we might even encourage him to do so. So Rav Perlau is coming up with this very fundamental distinction between a person who, let's say, enjoins himself from a pleasure, which you could call, minias milui tavaso, and that's considered okay and maybe even laudatory, as opposed to a person who's being mitzari himself. Again, in the light of his distinction, you wonder about Rabbi Elazar HaKapar, because the Nazir is not really causing himself pain as much as denying himself the pleasure of drinking wine. The Aram says, as a general rule, this is one of the Balei HaTosfos, that if a person is mitzayir himself, not out of anger, he's not, he's not a masochist who's beating himself up alive, but he's doing it for whatever it is, l'shem shamayim, it's mutter. So the question is, can we go one step further and expand the scope of the Urayim to our case where he doesn't want to pay for the ventilator? The Netziv, quoted here on page Tuf Ayin Gimel, in Masechta Sota, writes that if a person is mitzayir himself during a time period when the world is going through tsar and he wants to, so to speak, identify or commiserate, you know, he wants to empathize with what the world is going through, that's permissible. So now we come to our question, would a person be allowed to be mitzayer himself in order to save money? And in this particular tshuva, here on page Tafayin Gimel, he quotes Rav Moshe Feinstein in Igros Moshe. So we'll stop here at Amir Tzashem Bli Neder. If we can, we hope we'll take up the tshuva of Moshe next week, and we'll see if that will shed a light on our case of the Chola Corona who refuses to take, you know, to spend the money. He'd rather suffer than spend that money.